Welcome to this very special episode of the More Than Sunday podcast. I'm Rohini Drake, and I'm on staff here at First United Methodist Church in Richardson, Texas, and we're so grateful and excited to be part of the UM Communications Podcast-a-thon. This is our very first live-streamed podcast, and we are just so excited to be with you all today. Today, I'm joined by our senior pastor, Clayton Oliphant, and our creative director here at the church, Eric Chakowski. And we are going to have a conversation about influencers and influences and in the context of disciple making and how that's all related. So Clayton and Eric, thank you so much for being here today to have this conversation.
Thank you, Rohini.
It's exciting to be here.
All right. So as you know, but many who are listening may not know, FUMCR has been part of the Richardson community for over 130 years.
I'm 37.
137. And, you know, as I mentioned, we've been talking about influencers, people who have been making positive impacts in their communities, whether it's through the work that they do, charities that they founded, hope that they're instilling in the community. And so we wanted to kind of focus and talk about FUMCR and churches and organizations that can be influences wherever they're located. So maybe first, let's just kind of set up what we feel like influence is and influencers are.
Yeah. I was talking to an elementary school teacher, and she said, you know, she asked the question every year, what do you want to be when you grow up? And that, in the old days, when I was in school, it was, I want to be a policeman or a fireman or you want to be a teacher, a nurse, a doctor, all kinds of things like that. She said the number one answer is, I want to be an influencer, which is really interesting because what they're talking about is social media influencers. And what I've learned about social media influencers is that you can make a lot of money if you get enough followers that people will pay you to push their products, and it's become the new form of advertising. And it's very lucrative for a very few people, maybe not as much for most people. But, you know, how many people actually make that as an influencer to influence thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people? And I think, you know, we're talking about, you know, just how does the average person, you know, live their lives in such a way that you become an influencer where you are. Very different than a goal to be famous or to be a celebrity. How do you, and particularly in the Christian context, how do you model a life that looks like Jesus?
I heard a similar sentiment to that, Clayton, and you said it just a second ago when asked. A lot of the kids say, I want to be famous. So it's not even a profession necessarily, even though sometimes if they name a profession, it's influencer, but I want to be famous. And I wonder if the motivation behind that is, I want people to care about what I think. I want people to think that I have something of value or think that I matter or think that, you know.
And the positive in that, Eric, is that people say, I want my voice heard. I want my voice to count. And in that sense, yes, you know, everyone has a voice. Everyone can use their voice to their life to speak about things they care about.
Yeah.
So I love that.
I heard an interesting piece in a different context around leadership, but I think it plays in the influencer conversation as well, which was you're not a leader, or in this case, you're not an influencer unless you have a follower, at least one, right? Hopefully, I think for a lot of people who maybe want to have influence, hopefully in positive ways, but that they want lots of followers. But this conversation was basically making the argument that you're not an influencer unless you have a follower. Right. And so, I mean, again, you know, the hope is that, that the voice that you're striving for is a positive one in the world. But I just thought that was an interesting sort of something I hadn't really thought about, you know, this was more in a business context, talking about management and leadership and that sort of thing. But you know, they sort of said, yeah, you're not a leader unless you have someone following you, you know?
That's very interesting. I hope some of our kiddos recognize that, know that. Maybe they're just honing their skills on YouTube and doesn't matter yet who is following them.
That's right.
But then kind of out of curiosity, who are some of the influences that you can name in your life, like across the board, like whether it's spiritually or, you know, right now on social media, I follow this lady, you know, and I'm a mom of three. And so I follow this lady who, like, top to bottom gives you all these tips on how to clean your house. Like, oh, you've got dust in this corner. Well, let me show you a trick to get rid of that dust. And to me, like, she is the biggest, one of the biggest influencers in my life, because that's practical and useful steps that I can go home and do. But then spiritually, reading Richard Rohr books and just the impact that his thoughts and the way that he writes and his ideas have impacted my life spiritually, you know, he's a huge influence on my life. So I'm curious, like, who are influences in y'all's life?
I would certainly say the first that come to my mind are my parents, or just family in general. And I think probably that's true for a lot of people, whether it's family of origin or chosen family, that those are the people that you either spend a lot of time with or that you have meaningful relationships with. And so the ways that they care for you, the ways that the things that matter to them often sort of rub off on us. You know, I think I'll butcher the quote, but I've heard it said, you know, you're kind of the average of the five people that you hang out the most with, right? And so I think that's human nature for those kinds of things to rub off on us. And we are reflections of the company we keep, as they say, right? In some respects. And so, but yeah, for me, I would certainly say, you know, my parents. And I think that's, I feel very fortunate to have been raised in the family that I was, and to have the examples that I had. But that is, in almost all circumstances of life, whether I agree or disagree with, you know, a particular subject or encouragement from, you know, from my parents, I know that their voices are always in my head, and usually for the better.
I would echo that as well. My parents, and every poll that I've ever seen shows that parents are the number one spiritual influence on a child. And if you think about, you know, your spiritual life, you know, and if you're a parent, that's job one. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're raising your child and helping them understand they are a beloved child of God. They are loved and they are valued. And so, yeah, my parents instilled that in me and in my siblings. And I would also flip it and say, for me, in more recent years, my kids have been a tremendous influence on my life and my spiritual life, because now they're grown adults now, and you know, they want to change the world. They want to make the world better, and so they've inspired me and pushed me and made me grow. So I would name my kids as influencers in my life. And I'll also, you know, you listen to people, other podcasts, like people like Brené Brown, who has really inspired me, particularly during the pandemic. She's writing about, you know, Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech. And she said, there's some quotes like, unless you're in the arena getting your tail kicked, I don't really care what you think about outside voices and outside influences that sometimes we listen to that we shouldn't, you know, and that maybe there's just a very few people that we really need to listen to in terms of what we care about, what they think. And certainly one of those is to try to understand the voice of God in our lives. But I, you know, in terms of people, I would name, you know, my parents, my wife, my kids, number one, and then, you know, some amazing friends. Friendship makes a huge difference, in having people that are there for you.
Clayton, there's a story that you shared that always sticks with me about the way that you influenced your kids, and in turn have influenced me in my parenting. And then also, it was inspiring to hear from your kids, but the story you've told about when your son went to college, and the first Sunday he was off at college, you know, said, oh, I was at a church. And you thought to yourself,
yeah,
you're out of the house. And the first thing you did is, you know, you went and found a church. And his response was, well, we went to church every Sunday. Where else would I be?
Why are you surprised?
Yeah. and that impacted me so strongly, as, again, the the foundation that you obviously had set, you know, as a parent, saying this is something that we're committed to as a family, because we believe in the importance of it. And when he was old enough and independent to go be able to make his own decisions, that was part of who he was. And then, as you said, the flip side of that, you know, that was inspiring for me to hear, like, oh man, you know, for kids to sort of be reflections of the things that maybe we hope to instill in them. I feel like reciprocates or maybe wants to make me double down on, you know, that's inspiring for me to continue to try to lean into those kinds of things with my own kids. So, yeah.
No, and I like to hear that. And I think it's something that maybe I forget to even name for my own kids, but how powerful that can be, that you can say, but you're influencing me. It's not just like because of age, because of experience, I am the one with all the influence, but that we can name that everybody around us, everything around us could potentially be influences on us, and how powerful that is for our kids to hear. But then Clayton, as you mentioned with Brené Brown and, you know, kind of balancing these voices of influence, you know, how do we do that? How do we kind of figure out what that balance is of, you know, there's good inputs, there's negative inputs, like balancing, you know, figuring out like how long do I scroll through social media feeds about cleaning my house before I'm like, you know what, as much as I can learn about cleaning my house, I probably need to go do something.
Someday you just need to clean it.
Someday to actually get up and clean it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the social media rabbit hole can be very positive. It can be very negative. And my wife got off of Facebook several years ago because she just said, I just can't. It's just not healthy. And I think that was a very important choice for her, you know, for her own mental health and well-being. Is like, I don't need to do this. This is not healthy. And I think we all have to recognize, you know, or strive to recognize who are those people in our lives that build us up and lift us up, and who are the people that tear us down. And, you know, I want to be around people more so. You can't avoid it sometimes, but you know, you want to be around people that are lifting you up and encouraging you and blessing your life. And, you know, I pray that's what the church is, that we're a community where people are lifted up and blessed and encouraged and welcomed. And you know, when you leave church, I've always said this, when you leave church, you ought to feel better than when you came. You know, now sometimes you're going to feel convicted, right? You know, that's different, feeling convicted by something you've heard in the message or in the something that God spoke to you in a way that convicted you to go do something about your life or go do something about some issue in the world. But she should be lifted up. And, you know, too often we get in patterns where we're around people that just tear us down, and the negative influences in our lives, or, you know, you get on social media and you just get that negativity, and it's so divisive. And it's like, is this really the world I want to live in? Or do I want to find a way to be a part of something more positive in my life?
You mentioned earlier, hopefully amidst the noise, listening for the voice of God. Mm-hmm. How do we discern in a world that is so noisy, how do we discern what is of God, what is of the world? Is it both and sometimes? Is there intersections where those things can be the same? I'm always interested. One of the things I pray for often in my life is clarity in situations. And that can be really hard when we're trying to discern where God is leading us. And so that's why it's always really refreshing when I feel like I discern clarity or somehow am provided some clarity in situations. But I'm interested in the context of this conversation, you know, in a noisy world, what are some strategies, or how do we listen for God's influence in the midst of the noise?
I kind of go back to the basics, and it's like, if my life is framed and I see the lens that I choose to look through to see the world is the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And if I use that as my framework for life, then it's like what I'm experiencing, does that look like a Jesus response? Does that look like a Christian response? is this something that would be pleasing to Christ? Is this something that Christ would say, I don't know about that, you know? I think there's something that you know, and you know, we all bring our own lens to that even. So, but you know, as much as we can to learn about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus and try to live our lives accordingly and find those voices that mirror that. In the New Testament, in the book of Acts, which our church is going to study as this influencer series, there's a story about a man named Barnabas. His real name was Joseph, but they started calling him Barnabas. He was such an encouraging presence in the life of the early church that they said he's Barnabas, son of encouragement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just think there's something about his life and his influence on the early church that they said, okay, that's, we want more of that. And when you see people in your life that reflect the light and the love of Jesus, and you say, I want more of that. I want to hang around people like that. I want to be around people like that. I want to be influenced by people that are radiating that hope and that light into the world. And instead of just participating in all the negativity of the world, you know, let's be the people that are radiating hope in this world. We have hope in our faith.
How do you think we go about that? Because I think kind of sometimes in these contexts and in these conversations about influence, it feels like a very one-sided, like I'm consuming. Like, what mm-hmm. am I consuming that's positive? What am I consuming that's negative? But like you're mentioning, like we need to go out. We need to be the hope. So how can we change that influence of like just taking in that consuming into actually participating in? Like, what does that look like practically?
I think, you know, one of the things I love seeing is members of our church that are out in the community blessing the community. If you're going to influence the world and make a positive difference, somebody asked a question a long time ago, and I've heard others say this, if your church ceased to exist, would anyone in your community notice? Would anybody know that, okay, that they're not meeting anymore? Would that make a difference? And one of the things that inspires me as a pastor is to see lay people who are living the faith in action. And they're not just consumers of a message. They're out taking the message to the streets. And you know, we've got people that are involved in volunteering at our community ministry food pantry and people that are involved in advocating for changes in legislation around, you know, sex trafficking, particularly for victims that are impacted by that. You know, there are people that are putting their feet to their prayers and they're going out and making a difference in the world. And, that's just inspiring to me. That it's not just like, you know, you're going to sit around and be influenced by others. No, I'm going to take what God has given to me and I'm going to go out into the community and wherever I can touch life. And I always say, you know, students can do this at school. People can do this in their workspaces and with their coworkers, in our homes. We need it to do it in our homes, in our neighborhoods. We need to change the narrative in our world. And build up.
I love the active part of that call. And, you know, Rohini mentioned sort of the consumerist nature of so much of the content that's out there. And again, some of it is good and can be life-giving content, whether it's House Cleaners or Richard Rohr or any of those things. I've been mindful personally, and I resonate some with Lori, Richard Rohr and Lori combined in my head, with your wife getting off of Facebook. And I actually don't have the apps on my phone anymore because I found in a similar situation, it was sort of unhealthy because I was just consuming content all the time. And even if it's good content, it sort of almost felt sort of, like idolatry, like of the content itself or of the phone or of the social media. Again, even I think too much of what some would consider a good thing, when I wasn't focusing on, really discerning God's word or God's voice through that. I just cared more about this, and it does interesting things to our brains too, right? I mean, it rewires. I mean, and so as a parent of young kids, I mean, my wife and I are having the conversation all the time about trying to be intentional about the kinds of influences or content or things that our kids are consuming. And again, not even, I mean, obviously there's things that we would hope they would wait from an appropriateness standpoint for later on in their lives. But even things that we would deem, you know, sort of kid appropriate, how much of it do we want them consuming? And, you know, does it leave room, you know, again, for the things that we are trying to prioritize as a family, and the kinds of things that we hope, you know, clearing a path for them to be able to hear God's voice.
Simplifying and kind of downsizing, you know, and right-sizing your life in a sense.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point to bring up, because I think what in my head kind of like, okay, well, if you stop the scrolling or if you stop with the apps on your phone, you know, then maybe you can go and do this or maybe you can go and do that. But trying to, like, parent of young kids, trying to say, but it's also okay to just sit and be still, because that, I think, is also an important influence that we don't always name to ourselves or to our families, to say, like, but it's okay to just sit quietly, to just be. And, you know, in this world that's an onslaught of information and content and everyone's trying to get your attention for something, it's nice to be able to find times and places to kind of turn it off and be and rest.
Yeah. Our clergy from the church, we went to Sabbath services at a local synagogue recently, and it put us on a journey of studying a book by Rabbi Heschel on Sabbath and kind of reclaiming that concept for ourselves. And that included, you know, Sabbath from social media, that we need times where we need rest, and we just need to restoration of our lives. And so if we're just going all the time, you know, our bodies are not wired that way. The way God made us in creation, God rested on the seventh day. And the way God made us is that we were built to work and to make a difference in the world, to be good stewards, and to rest. And that balance, and it's so hard when you've got young kids. I know it's so hard to find that balance. I've been there, but you know that we can take breaks, and that's one of my mentors said. You can find Sabbath every day, every week, as well as every year for a vacation. But to try to find a break every day where you're giving your mind a rest. To find every week that rhythm of Sabbath, I think is so important in terms of, and it's so countercultural, so countercultural.
One of the things our kids say too, we get a lot of, if there's not something happening, I'm bored.
Yeah.
And we say, it's okay to be bored.
Yeah.
It's good to be bored sometimes. And whether when you're bored, you rest, or maybe you create something, or you imagine something, or you know, as you said, so countercultural. We're an Amazon instant gratification society, and I'm guilty of it. I, you know, the moments when I think to myself, it's going to be 3 days before my shipment gets here. You know, I can't have it overnight tomorrow by 8 a.m. You know, I mean, I think many of us, I shouldn't speak for everyone, but many of us are probably guilty of that. But that's another conversation we try to encourage. It is good to be bored sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It totally is. Yeah. Harder to do than it is to say. So one of the things, you know, when we're talking about, like, there's practices and there's ways to kind of unplug from the consumer nature of influence, whether it's positive or negative, and then kind of coming back to, as an organization and as a church that exists in a community, like, what are our hopes of influence? Like, we know we can look back and see what influence we've had as we support different local organizations that are doing good. Then personally, we can also look back. But what are hopes here for FUMCR and for others just trying to figure out what the future might look like and what goals we may have to influence positive change in the future?
You know, I think our faith is best seen as a movement. And, you know, the more institutional you become, the harder it is to think about being a movement. But it feels like what the world needs to me, as I look at things, is we just need to create a movement of God's light and love in the world. And if we can help people do that in their homes, with their families, their loved ones, their friends, if we can take that light out into the community and be a blessing wherever we are. And it's not just about being nice. It's about, you know, it's about bringing the light of Christ. And sometimes that's pushing buttons, and sometimes that's difficult, you know, challenging conversations, but bringing the light of Christ to the world. You think about what Christian formation is all about. It's about a conversion, the old-fashioned evangelical word conversion, which I'm not opposed to, because it's the change that God works in the human heart. It's God's love working on our hearts to change us, to make us more like Christ, to perfect us in love, to use John Wesley's term. And that becomes really the movement that we want to participate in and be a part of. And it's less institutional and therefore harder to define, but you know it when you see it. You know when you see that light, those people that are connecting with the light of Christ. And with, you know, in such a divisive world, if we could be a movement that is sparking hope and light in the world. I know it's all nebulous. It's not real specific, but I think every person has to find out, what does that look like for me? What does that look like in my life? Where do I influence life? Where do I touch life? How can I make a difference? One of our members just told me he's been concerned about relationships between community and police. And he went and bought 50 basketballs and delivered them to the police department to hand out to kids when they see them. And I thought, okay, you know, that's a tangible expression of trying to draw people together and build up rather than participating in the tearing down of our world. That's trying to build bridges of understanding. And I love that one of our members just said, what can I do? How can I make a difference? And for some reason, he thought of that.
And I feel like so often you talk about conversion. You know, at least my understanding, and ever evolving as I get older, but the hope is that as our hearts are converted and we are convicted to go out and do this work, it becomes a cyclical thing. So then we go out and do this work and we experience further conversion, which then propels us out to do more, and we experience further conversion. And so it's this cycle of heart transformation and conviction to go out into the world. And sometimes, like so many things, whether it's, I keep coming back to the house cleaning thing. I don't know why that's sticking with me, but whether it's taking the first step to go do the thing, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, for first starting to try a new workout routine, the hardest day is the first day. The hardest thing to do is the first thing. And then it becomes more a part of who we are, and it becomes easier to either see the need or see the thing or open ourselves to God's movement in our hearts. I guess my encouragement, and it's an encouragement to myself, is to try to find the first thing.
Yeah. And that's so important, Eric, because spiritual disciplines, to live a disciplined life is, you know, disciple and discipline come from the same root word. And to think about, what are those disciplines I can participate in that draw me more into the person that God designed me to be, rather than just kind of existing in the world, in space in the world. How am I being intentional about living my life? And you know, discipline sounds dull, but there's something about that practice over and over and over again. And it is a lot like physically working out or starting a new habit. You know, you do it over and over again, and there is a cyclical nature for sure to it.
I like hearing that. It feels very encouraging to hear mm-hmm. that, you know, we're part of a church, but we're all individuals, and this transformation that happens individually is the thing that we can take with us. I was at Target and I picked up a little book. It was a little girl, Indian girl on the cover. It was a children's book called Namaste. And throughout the story, she's just going to people and, you know, sharing Namaste with them. And at the end, you know, she meets somebody and she says, "The divine in me recognizes the divine in you." Mm. And I thought that's like such a simple idea and concept that all of us, little girls, little boys, all of us have this within us to be able to recognize the divine or God in other people. And those are the little things, like those are our little places of influences individually. And then as we bring those together in community and collectively, can make huge impacts in the world overall. And so it's encouraging to just maybe recognize our place in this influence spot of, yes, we are influenced, but we can influence. And so I appreciate the conversation and the insights that y'all both shared. Eric and Clayton, thank you so much for being here and just spending time talking to us about it. And thank you all for listening again to this very special More Than Sunday podcast episode. I want to thank UM Communications for inviting us and allowing us to be part of this live stream. And if any of you out there want to listen to any of our past episodes of the More Than Sunday podcast, you can find us wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcasts, or you can watch us on YouTube at youtube.com/FUMCR for any of our past episodes. And our upcoming season 8 and 100th episode that comes out this Wednesday, October 4th. We hope that you listen to us. And on behalf of all of us at FUMCR, we hope that you have a wonderful week.